Today we are going to have the history of the New Barth Jewelry Store and other stores in our Moorhead community. I, the interviewer, Mrs. Andrea Munn, have the pleasure of interviewing you, Richard New Barth, the owner of our New Barth Jewelry Store in the Moorhead Center Mall. We want to go back in history, and you are a Moorhead native, and your roots are really here. And what year were you born, Richard?
In 1934.
Uh-huh. 1934. And could you give us a biographical sketch, such as your age?
Well, then I would be 51 years old, and graduated from Moorhead High School in 1952, and went to work in the jewelry store till 1955, and then went to Elgin Watchmakers College at Elgin, Illinois. At that time, it was part of the Elgin National Watch Company, and graduated from there in 1957.
Yes.
After which, then I returned to Moorhead and went to work full time in the store from the fall of 1957 until the present.
The store was already then called New Barth Jewelry Store.
Yes, it's always been New Barth Jewelry. Yeah.
What can you go back in history as to who originated the New Barth store? Was this your father, or shall we go back to your grandfather?
Well, my father originally started the store.
In what year?
Well, in 1917 or 1918, he went to work for a local jeweler in Moorhead. His name was H.H. Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N. And he worked for Mr. Hansen, washing windows, cleaning up, and then gradually Hansen started him as a clerk, and then taught him watch repairing and jewelry repair. And in 1924, my father, Henry New Barth, he bought the business from Mr. Hansen. The original store they were in then was located approximately where the Moorhead Theater was later to be built. And then they moved to 420 Center Avenue sometime between 1927 and 1929. And that location at 420 Center Avenue, that was our location until February of 1973.
So your father was at that location quite a long time.
Quite a long time, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was the store called, the jewelry store, before your father named it New Barth?
Well, then it was H.H. Hansen Jewelry.
Oh, it was called the H.H. Mm-hmm. Hansen.
Yes. Yeah. And later it, somewhere along the line, it did become the Hansen and New Barth Jewelry.
Oh, it had a double name
for a year or two. And then it might have, then there was one time it was called New Barth's Jewelry, and then formerly Hansen Jewelry Store. And then after a couple of years, that was phased out and it became all New Barth's, just primarily New Barth's.
Were there other jewelry stores in Moorhead that you would be able to recall?
Well, yes, there were. The only other store during the 1930s and 1940s was Martinson's Jewelry. Fourth Street and Center Avenue was where that was located.
Yes.
And then there probably were a few smaller jewelers or watchmakers before that time in Moorhead, but I don't have any recall or any records of who they would be.
Mm-hmm.
And then after World War II, a couple smaller jewelry stores opened in Moorhead. One of them was Fred Gunderson. He had formerly been a watchmaker for Martinson's Jewelry. And then after a couple years, Orville Brown joined Fred Gunderson, and they had a little shop together until Fred retired, and then Orville Brown took over Brown's Jewelry, and he had his shop in downtown Moorhead until the urban renewal came through in 1972. Then he went out of business.
Yes, yes.
And after the Holiday Mall was built, original jeweler down there was Ray Brooks from Open Brooks Jewelry in the Holiday Mall Shopping Center through the 1960s. And then he sold that to Harry Puffy, who now has a current Puffy's Jewelry in the Holiday Mall mm-hmm. Shopping Center. So there's never been too many jewelers located in Moorhead, primarily usually one or two main stores, it seems.
Yes, yes. How would you consider, what was the type of merchandise that you were selling when you first entered New Bars with your father? Has that changed a great deal as to the type of jewelry that you're selling now?
No, it's still pretty much the same in jewelry. There's less costume jewelry. The costume jewelry that was popular during the 1950s and 1960s has given way more so to a little more quality jewelry, more into old 10 carat and 14 carat gold.
Yes.
Watches, the watch industry has gone through quite a few revolutions and narrowed down to maybe just one or two brands, where when I started we carried about five different brands of watches, and almost all of them have in different degrees changed marketing or gone out of business. We carried silver plated flatware at that time, which now has given way to stainless steel flatware. The stainless is much more popular mm-hmm. today than silver plate, because there's no care, no polishing, very little maintenance on it.
Mm-hmm.
One thing when we were selling a lot of when I started in the 50s was electric appliances, like electric shavers, toasters, mixers, electric fry pans, things like that now have disappeared from the jewelry store. We don't carry electric appliances anymore.
Yeah.
Clocks would be our only electric appliance. Clocks would
yes.
probably be our only electric
yeah.
appliance now, but we used to sell quite a bit of electric appliances.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of all seemed to gravitate towards the department stores and the hardware stores, so we had to pull out of there.
And, of course, many of the discount stores have picked this all up, haven't they?
Yeah, they use them for lost leaders and things like that, and sometimes it's better mm-hmm. just to specialize and stick to the jewelry and the giftware items.
How did you obtain this merchandise? Did most of it go through ordering, or did a salesman call on you?
Well, mainly
the
salesmen come right to the store and call on us.
They still do that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they come, depending on the company and the location of the company, from either two trips a year or sometimes three trips a year if their supplier is based out of Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
I have attended a few jewelry shows in Minneapolis, but primarily, we prefer to buy right in the store so we can see if the merchandise, the sample merchandise that they have, is what we want, if it meets our quality standards, if we can compare it in price with things we already have on. Also, we can make sure that we don't duplicate.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when you go to start buying at a market, you can almost a lot of times you come home with the same things that you already got in the store, because it's you like certain items and that's what you like, and you start duplicating your inventory.
And things that really appeal, that people are looking for. You know,
yes.
The good sellers.
Yes.
Good sellers.
Yeah.
Then, of course, I'm sure when merchandise arrives, that you have good credit, but they'd rather you pay cash or write the check. But if you have good credit, well.
Yeah, most of the the jewelry industry has always had credit terms, usually 30 days. Now, sometimes they'll give us extended terms of 60, 90, or 120 days. That has been true throughout the business for as long as I can remember. And I think probably it was kind of fairly true even back in the 1920s and 30s. Most of the time we don't... they don't ask for cash right at the time that the merchandise is delivered. It's usually a 30-day or 60-day payment scale, and then sometimes they'll have special terms, like at this time of the year, now when we'd be buying for the fall season, in September we might get either December dating or January dating. So we have a chance to sell out quite a bit of the merchandise before it's necessary to pay for it.
When do you buy your Christmas merchandise, so to speak? You have to buy more. But of course you have your jewelry, you have the watches, but you have your crystal, pewter.
Yes.
When do you make those purchases?
Well, mainly we'll probably buy maybe on an average 3 times a year. Now, like right now, we're starting to we already have purchased some items, new items that are coming out for Christmas, for your fall season. We don't in a jewelry business. You don't really have to buy seasonable merchandise. We can purchase things in August, which will sell real good all the way through right up to the end of the year. But primarily, the salesman will come around in late January or early February to fill in what we've sold through Christmas. Then they'll probably come back again in... May, and in between those times, as we run out of things, we do order. Of course, we have keep a regular running account with a lot of the suppliers, and as we run out of a good staple item, we will reorder it.
Yes, and you find that even with people being so mobile, you have steady customers that come back to your business.
Oh yes,
back to your store regularly for the gift things.
Oh yes, we have kind of built on a customer relationship for many years, and I know we have families where the grandparents probably dealt with my father, and now I'm starting to see and I dealt with their children or grandchildren. We may even have some great-grandchildren already showing up. But we carry a large gift selection. We have a lot of people come back regularly for when they need anniversary gifts or wedding gifts, shower gifts. We try to have a selection of things.
I was wondering about that. You cater to the bride and wedding gifts.
Yes.
Keep a record of that. Of course, the department stores have gone for that in a huge way now, too.
But oh, yes, they have their...
There seems to be room for everybody.
That's right. We have We have bridal registries available for those girls that that want to use them, or and then but sometimes there's a lot of them that don't register, and or maybe things that they've registered, the people feel that they'll find some little gift that'll fit in just as well. And sometimes they feel if they make the take the time to pick out something just a little bit different, a little unusual, that then the recipient will remember who they got that item from, rather than just getting a place setting of stainless and, you know, from...
Now, surely, you could dwell a little on what has happened to the prices. We used to have sterling silver, we had silver plate, we had stainless, and the stainless is very beautiful today. The price is the thing that is
the inflationary period that we're in has had a great effect on pricing of everything. Also, the gold and our material, of course, we use the precious metals, which are gold and silver, primarily gold, and that, of course, has gone up considerably since the 1950s. Originally, gold was controlled at $35 an ounce from the 1930s until about 1975. Then the United States decided to allow all the rest of the world, gold was finding its own level. So they decided to release the price of gold and let it find its own level. Well, now instead of $35 an ounce for raw gold, the raw gold is right now running approximately between a little over $300 an ounce. So that has a big, where wedding rings, plain wedding ring at one time sold for $35. Well, now it's $135 to $155, depending
for
on the weight.
Perhaps the same type of merchandise.
Yeah, plain man's wedding band.
Yes.
Diamonds have gone up. Of course, all your colored all your gemstones have gone up, some because of increased customer demand and scarcity on the marketplace. The inflation has seen driven up prices well over what they were in the 1950s. But I know even when I started in say 1950-52, people would say, oh, I remember that was such and such a price before the war. Because back in 1939, things were considerably less expensive than they were in 1945 after World War II came along. Because that had been an inflation spiral. And of course, since the 1950s, we've been in a constant inflationary spiral. And it's you have to try to bear with it. We try to take advantage of lower gold prices. If we feel gold is going to stay stable as it has now for the past 4 or 5 years, really, we will, if we think that there's going to be a price rise coming on, we may stock up a little heavier in order to help. If we buy at a lower price, then we can kind of keep our retail prices depressed, and because you don't like to price yourself out of the marketplace.
No, that's people almost would shop around.
Yeah.
Of course they would for anything that they're interested in buying. And surely the watches, were they once the mainstay of the entire business, you think?
Well,
and they too have changed.
Watches always have been very important in a jewelry business. Diamonds are really the mainstay of any jewelry business. The watches have their ups and downs, and around the turn of the century or into World War I, pocket watches were all the rage. I mean, all they had were pocket watches. They had wristwatches. Early wristwatches were probably produced just prior to World War I, but mainly they were considered too feminine for a man to wear.
Yes.
And it wasn't until the GIs came back from World War I that the wristwatches in the United States, and especially in the Midwest here, started to be a little more acceptable to the men. And they still weren't too well accepted until after Lindbergh flew the Atlantic, because his only timepiece that he had was a wristwatch, and yes, just happened to be a bull of a wristwatch. So that added a little more input to wristwatches, and gradually, of course, by the 1940s, they were well accepted by all the men and women both. And then, of course, they've gone through many different styling changes. Then we saw in 1960 they came out with batteries, so you wouldn't have to wind a watch anymore. And they had battery-powered watches, which evolved into digital watches. And about the mid-1970s, the digital watches became all the rage.
How does that affect your business? You sell them.
Well, we run into cases where they're off-brand ones that we didn't sell, that we can't repair them.
Yes.
And that, of course, sometimes we don't like to see, well, even repair work, you don't like to see an unhappy customer. You don't like to tell them the bad news that we can't fix your watch. The digitals kind of upset the watch marketplace. Now the digital watches have dropped out again. Now we're back to the watches with regular hands and dials on them. And they are more popular.
Why did the digital watch change?
Oh, it was kind of a fad. It was just a fad. First they had the ones that had the red numbers that read out when you pushed a button. But that took too much strain on the batteries, and you couldn't see them in the daylight. You couldn't see them when you were driving a car. You couldn't check the time.
The first ones were very expensive.
Yes, they were, yeah.
And then talking about $300.
Yeah, yeah. They were $300 and $400, and they started dropping to $100 price range, and then all of a sudden they dropped down to $15, $16, and then that just knocked the bottom out of the digitals. And also the display module didn't lend it like a lady's watch. Most ladies consider a watch to be a piece of jewelry. And the digital watches, they just couldn't make feminine enough looking. For a sporty watch, they're all right. But for most ladies, to have one nice timepiece for a dress watch, or they want it to look like a piece of jewelry. And so that's where they come back to the jewelry store to find a watch that's just a little nicer than the run-of-the-mill timepieces.
Yes.
The watch industry always has been affected by very low-priced watches and better watches and then finer, expensive watches. Mm-hmm. In the early days of the 1920s and 30s, they had what they called the dollar watch, which was just a little round pocket watch, a throwaway watch. And then in the 1950s, we had the Timex watch company come out, and they made little non-repairable throwaway watches from $695 to $1995 that were supposed to put the rest of the watch companies out of business, but they're still in business, and they still make low-priced watches, and Bulova's still in business, and they still make little more expensive watches.
Yes.
And so there is a place in the marketplace for every one of these little different types of watches for whatever a person wants with a
For the inexpensive fad watch, well, Timex is so big now, I'm sure.
Yes.
That
yeah, in the faddy, sure.
The volume of the business is what keeps them going.
Yes, that's right. And then we get in. We never got into the real low-priced lines. Like you say, the fad watches, most of them are non-repairable watches. Even some of these battery everything today in the watch industry is battery powered now. We hardly have any mechanical watches to sell new anymore, the wind up kind. But even some of the little fad watches are considered non-repairable because when the battery goes dead, you can't find out who made the battery or what it'll interchange with. Mm-hmm. So we kind of leave that to the mass merchandisers and department stores, because when we sell something, we like to be able to repair it if it needs repair, or yes, replace it if the need may be. And with the low-priced items, repair, how to pay a watchmaker to sit down and even open up the back of a watch, it doesn't pay if he's just going to be working on $20 or less wristwatches. It just didn't pay to repair them, and they don't make parts replacements available for those low-priced models anyway.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, can you remember back, of course your father was the gold antique jewelry, so to speak. Was your father ever interested in that, do you think, 1900, or was that too early for him?
Well, no, we never got into into the antique jewelry, or estate pieces. Mm-hmm. Most of our buying has always been in the more modern look.
The current thing.
Some of the estate pieces are antique reproductions. They go two ways. Some go into the low-priced or inexpensive costume jewelry, and others will go into the more expensive or very expensive handmade jewelry. And sometimes the price range is just such that it's really out of the reach of some of our customers. But we primarily stayed in the current trends, whatever is current and is the better selling in the jewelry lines.
The Black Hills Gold, there are three or four companies at least.
Oh, yes.
Has been around for a long time. I don't know when the original Black Hills Gold would start, quite a while ago, but that has been revived.
Yes, they have
many,
enjoyed
many
a
places carry yeah. that.
Black Hills Gold has enjoyed a large revival, or has really gotten popular in the past few years. It has been around since the Gold Rush days, actually. And it's very easy for any jewelry manufacturing company to make the three color gold that they primarily use. It originally was that it was only the three original manufacturers that were located in the Black Hills of South Dakota that could call their merchandise Black Hills Gold.
Yes.
And since the past 2 years now, there have been other smaller companies opening offices or little shops in Rapid City or Custer or Deadwood, so that they can also call, and doing some assembling of their jewelry so that they can call theirs Black Hills Gold. It has gotten very popular through the Midwest here. It's a local product, which is one nice thing. I mean, it's not something that a New York designer fashioned or Los Angeles fashion designer made up. It's a localized, in South Dakota, it's a Midwest area. It has a flavor for American made, something that's primarily American made. We even sell some pieces to people that are going back to Europe to visit their relatives in Norway or Sweden or France.
Yes.
They come in and they buy some Black Hills gold jewelry to take back because they say they have nothing like that over there.
That's right.
Last fall I had several tourists here. They were from Norway. And they came and they bought a number of pieces to take back with them because they said they had been to the United States before, I believe, but they had a list of which relatives wanted earrings and which wanted bracelets and which wanted necklaces. And so they were buying different pieces of Black Hills gold jewelry. And, of course, they wanted to be sure that it was Black Hills gold.
Yes, nice
but it is,
quality.
That's right.
And there is a difference.
Oh, yes, there's quite a difference between the companies. That's why the three, we stay with just one manufacturer, Landstrom's Black Hills Gold.
Yes.
Which is one of the original pioneers of the metal. And then the other companies are the Thorpe Manufacturing and Stamper Manufacturing of South Dakota. Those are the three original originators.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the other nice thing is that it doesn't have to have any imported from stickers or stamps on any of it. Like I say, it's an American all-American product, and that
yes.
kind of, so if people like to be able to wear it and show it off. They use a few diamonds and a few colored stones, a few pearls in their setting. Primarily, it's all metal jewelry, so there again, the people don't have to worry about a stone falling out, or mm-hmm. you can wear it with almost anything, and you don't have to worry about a setting coming loose or a stone falling out or a pearl wearing out.
To be replaced.
Yeah. That's right.
We should go back in history now. Could you go back as far as your grandfather?
I think
he was born in what country?
Let's see. That would be Robert. My grandfather's name was Robert S. Neubarth, and he was born in Saxony, Germany.
Saxony.
In 1860.
Yes.
April 24th, 1860. And he was served some time in the German army. He was injured on maneuvers while he was in the German army.
He was a young man then.
Yeah. At that time, they probably drafted them around 17 or 18. They all, in those European countries at that time, everyone had to serve a hitch in the army. And after he was injured, then he was taught to be a cigar maker.
A cigar maker?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In you those mean days. A hand-rolled
That's
cigar?
Right. They made hand-rolled cigars. Made them by hand and had their own little shops located in different parts of the country.
In Germany.
That's right. He came to the United States in the mid-1880s, and he first settled and worked in New York City.
Yes.
And there he met a Joseph Plines, P-L-E-I-N-S.
What nationality would that be?
Well, Joseph was also German. His family came from the Rhineland, along the Rhine, there in the border of Germany. And Joseph already had family living here in Moorhead, so he talked Grandpa Neubarth into coming here. So they came here and they opened a cigar factory, Neubarth and Plines, and Robert met and married Joseph's sister, Gertrude. They were married here in Moorhead in 1894. And he continued as a cigar maker in Moorhead. He had his shop upstairs over some of the buildings on probably old 4th Street. And in fact, he even had several of his own brands of cigar. One was called the Belle of Moorhead.
That sounds like a lady, doesn't it?
Yes, it was, yeah. That was
the Belle of Moorhead.
Same as River Belle or
Belle of Scotland. Are we talking about the saloon days?
Yes, yeah, most of his
cigars and
yeah,
saloons.
The cigars were sold. The cigarettes, you see, in the late 1800s, cigarettes were not popular or were not had not gained in popularity like they have today. The men smoked cigars or they chewed tobacco. There were probably a few cigarette smokers, but most of the... There again, until World War I, I think they considered cigarettes to be kind of sissy.
Yes.
Sissified.
Frenchy or
yeah,
something.
Yeah. They were probably had popularity in Europe, but I've heard that they thought cigarettes were a little bit more on the sissy side than than a cigar was. And of course, then some of these cigars were thinner. I think the Belle of Morehead was probably one of the real thin cigars. Then he had another called Red River Favorite, and there was one called the Hildegard. But
wow.
They had their own boxes. And
wooden
they,
boxes.
They had the regular wooden cigar box.
They were made beautifully, weren't they, the wooden boxes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
they were all little dovetailed.
Elaborate, yeah. They just fit together perfectly.
I have seen them in years past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they were all painted up or papered on, and like a standing Liberty or Columbia, figure of the woman, like
yes.
Columbia or the Statue of Liberty. Well,
evidently, your grandfather, it went out of style to have the hand-rolled cigars. So
yeah, it probably, there in the... early 1900s, going in towards close to 1917 in World War One, I suppose the probably there again there's the National Tobacco Company started shipping their goods nationwide, and they probably couldn't compete with the prices or with the supply. Grandpa Newbarth did have quite a few accounts, having a couple old account books at home. He supplied them to a lot of all the saloons in Morehead, and those were considerable. And the hotels, we also have, I think in one record book, he sold cigars to someone up in Ada and in Glendon, either general stores or hotels. There were hotels in both those towns. All the towns along the railroad would have, the different railroad branch lines would have a nice hotel. And then, of course, neither of his sons, Grandpa Newbarth's oldest son was Robert L. Newbarth. He was born in December 21st, 1898. Mm-hmm. Throughout most of his life, he worked for the Northern Pacific Railroad. And passed away on January 11th, 1982. Now, my father, Henry Newbarth, was born on April 25th, 1901, and he went to work for this local jeweler, Mr. Hansen, in either 1917 or 1918.
1917, yeah. Uh-huh. Did your father serve in the military?
No. No, he was 1901. He was just a little bit too young there, you see,
because
he would have been 16 in 1917. So he's a little young.
Mm-hmm.
And he graduated from eighth grade and then went out looking for a job.
He was born in Morehead.
Yes, he was born in Morehead. And
he went out looking for a job,
yeah,
and he ended up in the...
In the jewelry
Hansen's
business.
Hansen's,
H-A-N-S-E-N. H-H, Hansen, yeah.
That is the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a jump from your grandfather with his hand-rolled cigars to
mm-hmm.
your father.
Yeah, a little bit.
Jewelry business,
yeah. Although, you see, they would need a little bit of dexterity in both work.
Yes.
There was a lot of handwork and working in the cigar industry and hand rolling the cigars. And there's a lot of handwork in the jewelry industry when we get into watchmaking and repairing.
Yes.
And
in the beginning, the watchmaking and watch repairing, that was the important thing for your father.
Oh, yes, yes. Repair
yes,
work,
he,
yes.
His start started with the watches.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then... later, when you
yes.
went to school, you got trained for the watches.
That's right, yeah. We that's kind of where all the older jewelers did start. They started as watchmakers.
Yes.
Actually, watchmakers means watch repairing, because even in those days they didn't actually make the watch from scratch. But
no.
If there were certain parts that were broken and non-obtainable, they were ways to make them. But nowadays, of course, it's different. Maybe there's more younger jewelers that are going for, say, management classes and things like that, and then just working behind the counter and not really learning the basics of what makes a watch tick.
Yes.
Or to sit down and be able to size a ring or set diamonds in a ring into gold, which is an art all by itself. But it's an interesting profession. It's one that you learn something new every day. You're always learning, I should say. And you can learn something almost every day. There's a lot of, there's always something new coming up. There's new designs that you, there's new gems that are coming out. But it's an interesting, very, very interesting profession. You learn so many things. There's a lot to learn in it.
It's and I'm sure that your customers every once in a while bring in older pieces that mean a great deal to them. They're collector's items.
Oh, yes.
And the old watches, they had the real big heavy ones, and then they had the paper thin ones,
yes.
The pocket watch.
That's
and
correct.
They run very well today if they're repaired.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. We still have quite a volume in watch repair work.
They value the old one. Not
why,
watch
sure.
More
yeah.
Now, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Even though
yes.
They may not use it that much.
That's right. But they like to keep it in good order, and they like to be able to, when they pick it up and wind it up, that it starts running and it's
and
better.
And then there was the watch that the hunter carried.
Oh,
a
with the covered case?
What?
Yeah, with the covered case?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Those pocket watches haven't completely gone out. We still carry a few of them. That hunting case watch is still a little popular, especially the past few years with men's vested suits has brought back the pocket watch for a little while, and also the pocket watch chain.
Now, there's reproductions of the originals.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
There's not...
You had an interesting clock in your store that Mrs. Roseberg bought, the one...
Oh, the little antique one?
Yes, the little antique reproduction.
With the flying pendulum on it?
Yes.
That's a reproduction of one of the first clocks that they ever invented back in about the... Oh, was that 1400, 1500? Even before discovery of America, they were trying to figure out a way to make a clock small enough to have on a desk without having a long pendulum hanging down. So they came up with the little one with the little balls and string to call it a flying pendulum. It's not very accurate, but it's really a conversation piece.
Yes.
It attracts it. Unusual.
Well, I've enjoyed this very, very much. I hope that you have. And I want to thank you
for
the most interesting history of our local jewelry store that we recorded today. And thank you, Mr. Newbarth.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for asking me.
Yes.
It was a pleasure.
All righty.